It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hey, Denise, how are we going?
Hey, how are you doing? It's another erratic weather day in Auckland.
I love a crazy weather day. I think Oh, yeah. I like looking up at the sky, having the rain fall on my face. It feels nice.
Well, we had a bit of sun about 5 minutes ago, and it is gone.
See, nothing compares to the crazy weather you get in Calgary, where I'm from in Canada, which we have like four seasons in one, where we have like a blizzard 1 minute and then 30 degree weather another.
Do you miss it?
Sometimes I do miss a really crazy cold, like 50 below winter.
Oh my word.
That is where I live.
I can't even imagine.
Oh, it's the best. It's best feeling, like when you lose feeling in your hands.
Is that like kind of wear snowshoes kind of scenario where you can't walk outside or you'll get lost in a snow dump?
I used to do my my paper run in like a sweatshirt and 50 below. So it's just, it's normal.
Oh, hearty. That's very hearty.
Definitely. So I guess we'll jump in. You are having a public meeting at the minute, a more serious subject, but it's following some assaults. So can you tell us a bit about what prompted you to have this meeting?
Yeah, so it's in my community of Onehunga in Auckland, mm-hmm. and really weirdly and sadly and tragically, there have been three serious assaults in 1 week, unrelated, which is actually probably the majority of the concern, because they are unrelated. Mm. And, you know, at some point, everyone just started asking the obvious questions around what's going on here, are we safe, you know, basic human response. But the third assault was with this gorgeous gentle giant, a guy who looks like he's busking all day every day in Onehunga, right smack in the middle of the main street, but he's not busking. He never asks for money. He just wants to play his guitar, some Elvis numbers, Crowded House numbers, and he was seriously bodily assaulted. Mm. So, you know, we're just saying, hang on a minute, what's going on here? And the community Facebook pages were just totally running hot. So I said to police, hey, how about I lead a meeting, you come, you explain what's going on from your perspective, and then we're going to turn it into a solution scenario where we get together, we get a community plan together as to how we can stay safe and be part of the picture.
Mm. Would you have described this area as a dangerous area prior to this week?
No, not at all. I mean, we have our fair share of crime, just like other places, but no, Onehunga is not a dangerous place to live. It's just that, you know, when you have something like this happen, I understand how residents will be going, well, is it a safe place to live? It just causes them to question. So this is an opportunity for us to get together, have fears allayed where we can, and then come up with a, you know, it's almost like a, we're going to fight back. We're going to do more stuff together. We're going to support community patrols. We're going to support neighbourhood support so that we can prove to ourselves and to others that it's a great place to live, and it is.
Mm. When it always comes to these kinds of dangerous events happening in our cities, what kind of action do you think needs, well, I mean, you clearly are taking action. What kind of action do you think should always be taken to prevent further violence?
Well, it happens at different levels, right, Laura? Mm. So, you know, the police need to be there and be present and visible and be responsive. So that from the police perspective, you definitely need that. And that's our taxpayer dollars at work, if you want to put it that way. We also need to know who our neighbours are. So when you bring it down to what can I do as a local, as a resident, if I don't know my neighbours, I'm not going to know how to look out for them, how to be aware. You know, we're way too isolated in our busy city called Auckland. Mm-hmm. And isolation brings disconnection, and people don't know. Most people don't even know when their neighbours are going away. So how would you even know to be extra vigilant to look out for their house and see if there's any suspicious characters around to ask the question? You know, do you even know who's a regular visitor to your neighbour's house? These are the sorts of questions that if you don't stop and ask and figure out whether you've got a plan for neighbourhood connection, then all of a sudden it'll be your street, and that has issues, and it'll be too late.
I always think when these kinds of things come up, I do find a rhetoric that comes out is trying to find blame. But what I find interesting about what you've done is you've gone more for like a public investment in terms of people investing their time in the community, investing just more resources in the community. Why is that important, do you think?
Because basically that's how we build a great community, Laura. We have connections with each other. We get to know one another. We invest. We take ownership. We belong. And I see this as an opportunity out of tragedy to stand together as a community. I genuinely do. And when we do that in partnership with police and in partnership with the business association and all the other players, we actually come out looking stronger, feeling stronger, acting stronger. And that's a message to anyone who wants to come into our community and muck around with it. We just won't tolerate it. It's sort of like a it's not a vigilante stand, it's a justice stand. And we'll be the better for it.
Certainly. I'm going to shift on to the Fox River ecological disaster, which I'm sure you're very aware of. What's been really interesting with this is seeing the intersection of council and government and the conversation around that in terms of who is obligated to take action. For you, who do you think this mess belongs to?
It's a really interesting play of events, turn of events, isn't it, Fox River? I think the answer is both. It's absolutely both, central and local government. But what we've seen in Fox River is the government taking 10 weeks to address it. And that's great that they've come in with $300,000 of funding, quite frankly, a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
So we had to launch a petition to kind of apply a bit of pressure to get the remedy for the disaster. But if you look at that $300,000, Westland District Council, that are, you know, they've got the real brunt of this, they've already spent more than $1 million on it. So it does raise a really big question. It's the biggest environmental disaster since the Rena oil spill. Why has it taken this long? And where is the right level between local and central government investment? Here's something else. If this had taken place in Auckland, a disaster of that magnitude, there would have been a massive public outcry. But you kind of wonder whether, because it was remote Fox River, whether we just haven't had the same attention. Hats off to local government. I know Westland District Council has been going 110%, and $1 million out of their small budget is huge.
I think it's interesting that you brought up Auckland, though, as well, because in covering this issue, something that was brought up was Auckland having, I think it's 80 different landfills. And with that coverage, it was an insinuation that this is something we should be concerned about that could happen in other areas. Is this something you're concerned about?
Yep, no, I think that's a legitimate concern. We've actually got Auckland, 112 landfill sites. 112 in the country, and 89 of them are in Auckland.
Wow.
So the lion's share are in Auckland, and I think another big concern is the proximity of the landfills to each other, and also to our bodies of water, to our harbours. So on several different levels, there is definite legitimate risk, and Local Government New Zealand, LGNZ, has identified Auckland at risk with those 89 landfills. We do need to take this really seriously and look at both a reactive, I guess, and looking at the security and the containment of those sites. But it's also preventative, right, Laura? Preventative, sending less stuff to landfill is right at the top of the list.
Yeah, and I guess that is a good segue into my next conversation, because Eugenie Sage brought up that she was talking about implementing a landfill levy. Is that something you would get behind?
Well, look, there's merit in the idea, but we would prefer an expansion of the waste levy that we brought in. So we brought in, when we were a government, the waste levy. It's already raised more than $200 million, and it goes straight to initiatives to reduce waste. So what we're intending to do, if still a government, was to expand that to cover all sites and make sure there wasn't a variation on it. The problem with a straight out levy increase, a levy rate, is that it could be counterproductive and encourage people who just don't want to pay another tax, essentially, to just dump waste illegally. So the Greens raised this concept over a year ago, and we haven't seen a concrete action from them. They're just talking about doing this. So we would say, hey, come on, get onto it. It's been a while now. And look at the idea of expanding the waste levy so that you're not just going to individual residents and encouraging them. And some, because you know it'll happen. If they've got to pay more, they'll just say, right, I'll just dump illegally. If the refuse station fees too much more, I'll just throw my stuff down a bank.
I think what's interesting, because you brought up the waste levy and the amount of money that that's raised already. But in regards to the conversation around landfills and Fox River, a lot of that cleanup was estimated at around $14 billion in order to actually manage that waste and make sure this doesn't happen and repeat in other areas in the country. Is it not enough, that levy?
No, it's not enough. That's why we plan to expand it. So that's exactly right. It's not enough. But there's other solutions to raise revenue, right? And some of the best, most cost-effective, you know, well-produced solutions come from the industry themselves, the industry players themselves, Laura. So when you've got a government that's working really effectively with businesses and communities and, you know, looking at recovering resources and reduce, reuse, recycle, you see attitudes change that way. So there's no one silver bullet, but absolutely the waste levy could be expanded. We'd intended to do that. It was a good start by us. And we're still waiting to see what the Greens are actually going to do. It's just talk at the moment.
Will definitely be interesting to see what actually starts happening. I'm going to end on my last question here, which you are aware is the personal one. But my question...
I am aware. I'm bracing myself.
It's nothing scary, I promise.
No, they're never scary, but they're very probing, aren't they? They're very uncovering.
I'm definitely trying to learn more about you. See beneath.
I enjoy them. Says she 2 seconds before she's going to get it.
Well, my question for today is actually, when you were a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, the very first thing, I have to confess, I definitely did want to be an MP because my dad was one. And so I was really fascinated by what he was doing and where he was going and how it all worked and people in his committees who had very vocal and outspoken and had bees in their bonnet. I was just fascinated by that. But the very first thing that I ever wanted to be was a fighter pilot.
Oh, wow. That is
quite really random, isn't it?
Yeah, it is definitely off the beaten path of most things I've heard from people.
No, I just, there must be some grunty genes in there somewhere because I just thought, oh, I'd really like to fly a fast plane. And scoot about the sky.
Oh, gotta appreciate it. Well, we'll be speaking with you next week, Denise, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Laura. You take care.
You too. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.